Welcome to Alarion, a realm shaped by shattered ages and rising legends. Part of StoryOmniverse.com. This tale is titled, The Mire's Quiet Vow. The winds of magic stir, the dragons awaken, and the story begins. Chapter 1. Hollowroot's Funeral Lights. I, Harith Siltquill, set this account down from Hollowroot's Reed Archives in the season after the lanterns were relit for judgment. The Vinebound do not favor ink. They favor memory braided into cord and song. Still, some grief refuses to stay only in mouths, and so I write what I was told and what I saw, and what the mire itself seemed to confirm in its quiet ways. In Hollowroot, the lanterns did not burn like fire. They glowed with swamp oil and pale fungus, soft as breath, hung low from living arches of vine and root. Their light fell on mud that had been smoothed by careful hands. Lilt slipped from the reeds with her cloak dripping. She expected the usual hush of watchful growth, the low rustle of the whispering bloom's mind moving through stems. Instead, she found a ring of vinebound standing still, tendrils braided in warning knots. At the center lay her brother, half-curled as if sleeping. His vine arms had been cut clean. The severed ends were dark and wet, already trying to knit, but failing. The mud beneath him was stained with sap that smelled wrong. Lilt knelt. Her fingers hovered before they touched him, as if she feared the body might accuse her for arriving late. She pressed two fingertips to the cut edge, then brought them to her mouth and tasted the air instead of the sap. "Resin," she whispered. "Not ours." Morglow stood a pace away, hands clasped tight around a bundle of reeds. Her eyes were bright with grief. "He was only a gatherer," she said. "He brought moss for the duskworms. He did not even carry a thorn." Lilt's gaze stayed on the cuts. She saw, too, the small things that made him him. The way his tendrils had been trimmed unevenly at the tips, because he always rushed his grooming. The faint stain of marshberry on one knuckle, as if he had eaten on the walk home. She remembered him teasing her when she returned from patrol, saying, "You smell like fog and pride, Lilt." She remembered the last small quarrel, over a missing coil of rope he swore he had returned. She had meant to apologize for snapping at him. Now the apology had nowhere to land. A taller vinebound stepped forward, and the lantern glows seemed to gather around them, as if the swamp itself leaned in to listen. Vineheart's voice came from many leaves at once. "Lilt." Lilt's tendrils tightened around her wrists like cords. "Someone came from beyond the mire. Or someone wished us to believe that," Vineheart said gently. "Grief makes quick maps. It draws roads to the nearest enemy." Lilt rose, mud slid from her knees. "Then give me a better map." Vineheart's vines shifted, forming a circle that did not close. "Vows are not only spears. They are chains. If you bind yourself to revenge, you may pull the mire behind you." Lilt's throat tightened until her next words scraped. "Let it follow. Let it see what was done." Morglow's whisper caught her. "Lilt, do not go alone." "I am not alone," Lilt answered, though her chest felt hollow. She looked at her brother one last time. "He used to say the mire keeps what we drop into it," she murmured, almost to herself. "So I will drop this into it. A promise." Vineheart did not forbid her. That was worse than a command. "Then listen," Vineheart said, "not only to your anger. Listen to what does not fit." Lilt turned away from the funeral lights, and the mire's fog swallowed her like a closing mouth. Chapter 2. Bottle That Should Not Sink. The next portion I record from Tarn's own words, given later under watch. He spoke as if each sentence cost him, and perhaps it did. Tarn the Mirkborn worked where the ground never fully decided whether it was water or earth. His bench was a raft of woven roots tethered to a cypress stump, cluttered with clay cups and corked vials. When Lilt arrived, he was leaning over a basin, stirring something that smoked faintly. He did not look up at first. If you are here to accuse me, do it quickly, he said. My mixture listens when I hesitate. Lilt stepped onto the raft. It dipped, then steadied. I'm here because someone is dead. That made Tarn finally lift his head. His eyes were sharp and tired, like a heron's. I heard the lanterns. I am not death. He reached under the bench and drew out a sealed glass bottle. It was smooth and clear, too clean for Hollowroot. Inside, black spores clung to the inner walls like ash that refused to fall. When Tarn's fingers tapped the glass, the spores shivered. I pulled this from a sinkhole, Tarn said. It should have vanished. The mire eats what sinks, but it did not. Lilt stared at it. What is it? A whisper trapped in glass, Tarn replied. He brought it closer to her ear. Speak. Lilt hesitated, then said her brother's name, soft as she could. The spores hummed. Not a sound exactly. A vibration in the bones. The glass warmed as if it had been waiting. Lilt's breath caught. It answers. It answers words that carry grief, Tarn said, and it carries a scent. Smell the cork. Lilt leaned in. The cork had been sealed with a smear of bright resin, golden and sharp, like sap from trees that did not grow in the mire. Her anger, which had been a shapeless heat, found an edge. Galdroen, she said, naming the nearest upland timber hamlet beyond the mire's reed line. A place of dry bark and trade carts. Not a kingdom, not a distant power. Just far enough to be blamed. Tarn's mouth tightened. Forest resin. Verdant craft, perhaps. He said the phrase as locals did, meaning not a grand order, but the small ring of upland charm sellers who stamped their trinkets with a root circle and called it luck. Their symbols are roots and circles. Their hands are clean of mire. Lilt gripped the bottle. Why show me this? Because you will act, Tarn said plainly. Vineheart will wait and listen until the reeds rot. You will move. Lilt's gaze narrowed. You want the mire to strike first. I want us not to be prey, Tarn said. His voice softened, almost honest. And I want you to have something simple, a target. Grief is easier when it has a name. Lilt hated that the words comforted her. My brother's cut smelled of resin, she said. This is proof. It is, Tarn insisted. Or it is close enough to keep you from drowning in doubt. From the water below the raft, bubbles rose and popped in slow rhythm, as if the mire laughed without sound. Lilt held the bottle tighter, feeling the faint hum through her palms. Then I will follow the resin, she said. Tarn nodded. Do not break the seal. Spores like these do not forgive freedom. Lilt's tendrils curled around the bottle like a promise. If Galdroen sent a blade into Hollowroot, she said, I will send fear back. Be careful, Tarn murmured, but his eyes gleamed as if caution was a story he told to appear wise. Lilt stepped off the raft into the mud, and the bottle's hum followed her heartbeat all the way into the fog. Chapter 3. Morglow and the Skittish Wings. Here the accounts agree. Morglow sought Lilt before Lilt could vanish too far into her own vow. I note this because later, some tried to paint Morglow as only a trembling culprit. She was also the first to reach for truth, even when it frightened her. Morglow found Lilt at the edge of the nesting rise, where the mire lifted into a rare hump of drier ground. Reeds bowed in a wide circle around it, as if giving respect. The air smelled of wet stone and warm scale. You should not be here, Morglow said, breathless. Not today. Lilt did not turn. She watched the rise. Two duskworms, juvenile and lanky, lay curled near a shallow pool. Their hides were dark as drowned wood, their wings folded tight like cloaks. They should have been snapping at fish or nosing through moss. Instead, they flinched at empty air. They have not eaten, Morglow continued, voice tight with worry. They snap at shadows that are not there. I sing to them, and they shudder. Lilt's anger shifted uneasily. Dragons were not gods in the mire, but they were old, and their moods bent the swamp's breath. What happened? Morglo wrung her hands. The knights have been wrong. The fog grows teef. I thought it was grief. Lilt stepped closer. One duskworm lifted its head, pupils wide. It hissed, then coughed hard, body jerking. Something spat from its throat and landed in the mud with a wet slap. Morglo gasped and darted forward. Easy, little duskwing. Easy. Lilt crouched beside the thing it had coughed up, a strip of bark fiber, pale against the mud, twined with vine sap. It was tied in a knot that looked like a message, but not one Lilt recognized from Hollowroot's usual braid speech. She picked it up carefully. The bark smelled faintly of resin, but the sap binding it was mire sweet. Morglo's voice went thin. Why would it swallow that? Lilt studied the knot. It did not swallow it, she said slowly. It carried it, in fear. Morglo swallowed. A warning? Or a lure, Lilt replied, though the word tasted bitter. The bottle in her satchel seemed to hum in agreement, a faint vibration against her side. The second duskworm scraped its claws in the mud, restless. Its wings twitched, as if ready to bolt. Lilt lifted her hands, palms open. I will not hurt you. The creature's nostrils flared. It looked past her, into the reeds, as if something watched. Morglo stepped closer to Lilt, lowering her voice. If you are hunting someone, do not bring the hunt here. They are already frightened. I didn't come to hunt, Lilt said, though it was half a lie. I came to understand why the mire feels thin. Morglo's eyes filled again. Your brother used to bring them moss. He said they liked it soft. He said they were lonely. Her voice broke on the last word, and Lilt felt the sting of it, because it was true. He had said that. He had said it with a grin. As if loneliness were a thing you could feed until it stopped biting. Lilt's grip tightened on the bark fiber. Someone brought something else, she said. Something that smells of forest and fear. Morglo shook her head. The forest does not reach here. It reached my brother, Lilt snapped, then softened when Morglo flinched. I'm sorry. I need this to mean something. Morglo touched Lilt's wrist. Gentle. Meaning is not always a map to a culprit. Lilt pulled away, but not harshly. She tucked the bark fiber into her belt. If it is a warning, she said, then it warns of a hand that knows both bark and mire sap. Morglo's gaze flicked to the reeds again. Or of a hand that wants us to blame the wrong place. Lilt did not answer. The duskworms hissed at nothing, and the nesting rise felt like a stage where unseen actors rehearsed a tragedy. Chapter 4. A False Trail in Bright Resin. The resin scent led Lilt into the mire's half-forgotten edges, where old platforms sank and rose with the seasons. She moved lightly, stepping on roots that held, avoiding mud that swallowed. The bottle in her satchel stayed sealed, but its hum grew stronger whenever she neared a patch of bright sap on bark. At dusk she found it, a camp platform half-sunken, lashed to trees with rope. Someone had tried to keep it above water, but the mire had pulled it down anyway. On the warped board sat a small charm. It was crude, carved from pale wood and marked with a circle of roots. Too neat, too fresh. The symbol looked like something a child would draw after hearing a trader boast of upland luck marks. Lilt lifted it between two fingers. So, she whispered, you left your name. A soft rustle came from the reeds. Lilt spun, vine blades sliding from her forearm, green and sharp with living edge. Show yourself. No one stepped out. Only fog shifted, thick as wool. Lilt's breath came fast. She forced herself to look again, not at the symbol, but at the cord. The charm hung from a braided strand, tight and even. The braid pattern was familiar, Hollowrood style, the way vine-bound bound bundles and marked ownership. And there was more. A faint scent clung to the cord beneath the resin's shout. Fungus thread, the pale twine Hollowrood used when it wanted a braid to hold in wet seasons. Upland cord did not carry that smell. It did not carry that soft, sour sweetness. Her stomach tightened. For a moment, doubt rose like cold water around her ribs. Then anger shoved it down. They stole our braid, she told herself. They learned our knots. They think we are fools. She tucked the charm into her pouch. The platform creaked under her weight. On one board she found a smear of bright resin, golden and sharp. Proof again. Proof enough. Behind her a voice hissed softly. You found it. Lilt whirled. She saw movement now. A thin vine-bound figure perched on a root, almost part of the reeds. It was Lilt's fellow watcher from the Myers Edges, a quiet one, named Sedge, eyes always half-lidded. Why are you here? Lilt demanded. Sedge's tendrils twitched. I saw you leave Hollow Root with anger. I followed. Vineheart asked for eyes, not blades. Lilt held up the charm. Eyes see this, forest mark, fresh resin. Sedge leaned closer, sniffed, then recoiled. It is loud, Sedge murmured, like someone shouting a name in an empty bog. Galdroen, Lilt said, savoring the word like a curse. They want us to fear them, or they think we will not bite back. Sedge's gaze flicked to the braid cord. That knot is ours. They copied it, Lilt insisted. Sedge's voice dropped. Or one of ours tied it. Lilt's vine blade trembled. Do not say that. I am saying what my eyes see, Sedge replied, not unkindly. The mire makes liars of certainty, sinking to her ankles. I do not have room for your caution, she said. I have a grave that still smells fresh. Sedge followed her, careful. And I have watched grief turn into a door, Sedge said. Once opened, it does not always close. Lilt did not answer. In her pouch the charm pressed against her side like a false coin. She felt the cord's fungus thread, and told herself it meant nothing. The fog thickened, and the mire held its breath, waiting to see which story she would choose to believe. Chapter 5. Vineheart's Split Council. Vineheart met Lilt in Hollow Root's central hollow, where roots arched overhead like ribs. The funeral lights had been taken down, but their faint glow lingered in the fungus along the walls. Lilt stood with mud still crusted on her calves, the charm and bark fiber laid out on a flat stone before her. Vineheart's form was tall and calm, vines draped like a mantle. Show me, Vineheart said. Lilt pushed the charm forward. Upland Luckmark, resin seal, a camp platform on our edge. Vineheart did not touch it. And the cord? Lilt's jaw tightened. Ours, stolen. Vineheart's leaves rustled. Perhaps. Then Vineheart did something Lilt had only heard of in half-remembered lessons. The first speaker's body loosened. Tendrils slid away, splitting into three smaller forms that moved in different directions at once. One glided toward the entrance, to question the watchers. One flowed toward the nesting rise, seeking more glow. One remained with Lilt, still and listening. Lilt's anger flared. You divide yourself to avoid choosing. I divide to hear more than one voice at once, Vineheart replied. The mire speaks in overlap. Lilt pointed at the bark fiber. A duskworm coughed that up. They are afraid. My brother is dead. How many voices do you need before you act? Vineheart's remaining tendrils curled inward, as if in thought. Tell me exactly what you smelled on the cuts. Resin, Lilt said. Bright, foreign. And what else? Vineheart asked. Lilt hesitated. In her memory, beneath the resin, there had been something sweeter. A tang like Tarn's bench, like sap warmed in clay. She did not want to say it. Saying it would blur the clean line she had drawn from grief to target. I smelled mud, she lied. Vineheart's gaze did not accuse, but it did not soften either. When we lie to ourselves, we make the swamp smaller, Vineheart said. And the swamp does not like to be reduced. One of Vineheart's split tendrils returned first, dripping from the entrance. It rejoined the main body with a sigh of leaves. The watcher saw no upland folk, it reported in Vineheart's voice. Only a figure low to the water. Too quick to name. Another tendril returned later, smelling of reeds and dragon heat. Morglow says the duskworms flinch at shadows and choke on things they should not swallow. She says she has heard a hum in the mud at night. Lait's throat tightened. The bottle in her satchel seemed to hum back, faint and eager. The last tendril returned with a pause that felt like reluctance. Tarn says he found a bottle in a sinkhole, Vinehart said. He says it proves upland meddling. Lilt's heart leapt. You see, even Tarn. Vinehart's vine settled. Tarn says many things. He is clever. He is also lonely in his cleverness. Lilt stepped closer, voice shaking. My brother's death is not a puzzle for you to admire. It is a wound, and wounds close poorly when scratched open by haste. Lilt's hands curled into fists. So you will do nothing. I will do what the Whispering Bloom was made to do, Vinehart said. We will watch, we will listen. We will not let your grief steer the mire into a war it cannot afford. Lilt felt something break, not loudly, but like a root snapping underground. Then I will act without you, she said. Vinehart did not stop her. If you chase justice fast enough, Vinehart warned, you may outrun the truth. Lilt turned away, the charm heavy in her pouch, her vow heavier still. Chapter 6. The Spores That Speak in Borrowed Voices. Lilt found Tarn at his root raft again, but this time she did not step gently. The platform rocked under her weight, and Tarn's cups clicked together. He looked up, startled, then wary. You spoke to Vinehart, Lilt said. I speak to whoever comes, Tarn replied. The mire is full of ears. Lilt yanked the glass bottle from her satchel and held it up. The spores inside shivered as if recognizing their maker. Tell me again where you got this. Tarn's eyes flicked to the bottle, then away. A sinkhole. Lilt leaned closer. Her voice went low. Lie again, and I will crack it open over your bench and let your whispers crawl into your lungs. Tarn's jaw tightened. For a heartbeat, he looked like he might gamble on another falsehood. Then his shoulders slumped. It is mine, he admitted. I made it. The confession hit Lilt like cold water. You said it proved Galdroan. It could have, Tarn said quickly, then winced at his own words. He rubbed his palms together, smearing mud. No, that is not true. I wanted it to. Lilt's vine blade slid from her arm, not fully formed, but enough to show intent. Why? Tarn stared at the swamp water below the raft, as if it held answers. Because the mire is patient to the point of rot, he said. We wait and wait, and then something happens to us, and we call it fate. I hate that. So you fed my grief a story, Lilt said, voice trembling. You gave me a target because you could not bear the thought the mire might have done this to itself. Tarn flinched. Not because I was bored, he said, and there was heat in it. Because I was afraid. The thin nights are coming. Everyone feels it. When the fog turns sharp, and the shadows cling longer than they should. Not a sky curse, not a world-ending sign. Just a season in duskfall, when craft goes wrong more easily, and wrongness travels farther. You used my brother's death, Lilt said. Tarn's eyes sharpened with pain. Do not think I do not mourn, he snapped. He brought me herbs. He laughed at my stains. He called me Mirkborn like it was a joke, not an insult. Tarn swallowed, and his voice dropped. He told me once I should come to the lantern songs. I told him I had work. I told him I did not need songs. Lilt's blade vine trembled. Rage wanted to land somewhere. Tarn stood close enough to be a clean answer, but his grief was real. Crooked and sharp-edged, and it made the revenge she had promised feel suddenly messy, like mud stirred from the bottom. What are the spores? Lilt demanded. Tarn drew a breath, as if choosing words that would not invite more fear. They are bound whispers, he said. Not spirits, not a plague, a craft trick. I steep sap with fungus spore and a pinch of night silt, then seal it. When spoken to, it vibrates, It makes a hum that living vines and roots can carry farther than a voice.
Like a message that rides the mire's own nerves.
He looked at her, pleading to be understood and hated for it. It is not meant to command. It is meant to test how the whispering bloom hears.
You could have stirred panic, Lilt said.
I did, Tarn admitted, and the honesty landed harder than denial. Not on purpose, but intention does not stop consequences. Lilt's voice dropped to a whisper. Then why did my brother smell resin?
Tarn's gaze flicked up. Resin is not only upland, he said slowly. Some sap turns bright when mixed wrong, when heated, when blessed by someone who does not understand what they touch.
Lilt stared at him.
Who?
Tarn shook his head, but his silence named more than words. His eyes slid toward the nesting rise, toward Morglo's path through the reeds.
Lilt's chest tightened. If you know something, say it.
I know only that fear makes people steal, Tarn said, and devotion makes them justify it. I left my vials where hands could reach them. I told myself it was trust. It was vanity.
Lilt's vine blade did not strike. Instead, she lowered it, disgusted by her own hesitation.
You lied to push the mire into action, she said. Now you will help me find the truth you tried to outrun.
Tarn nodded once, grim.
And when I decide what you deserve, Lilt added, do not ask me for mercy.
Tarn's voice went quiet. Mercy is not what I expect from vows.
Lilt turned away, bottle still sealed in her hand, and the spores hummed like borrowed voices, laughing at them both.
Chapter 7. The Night of the Duskworm's Panic. I was told this night by three mouths, and each mouth shook in the telling. The mire remembers panic more clearly than it remembers peace. Night in Duskfall Mire was never fully dark. The fog held faint light, and the water reflected lantern glow from Hollowroot like scattered stars. Lilt moved fast through reeds, following Tarn's directions, anger pulling her forward like a hook. Then the mire changed. A ripple of cold slid across the water, and the reeds shivered as if a wind passed through them, though the air was still. Shadows thickened between roots. Not deeper darkness, but something that felt alive, pressing against skin and leaf. Lilt felt the hum of the sealed bottle answer it, as if the craft in her satchel recognized the season's thinness and leaned into it. From the nesting rise came a sound that made Lilt's heart lurch, a duskworm's panic screech, high and ragged. Morglo's voice followed, distant and terrified. No, no, little duskwing, stay with me. Lilt stopped so abruptly, mud splashed her legs. Tarn, a pace behind, grabbed her arm. Do not go there, he hissed. If the shadows are restless, they will feed on fear. Let Morglo handle it. Lilt yanked free. She is alone.
She chose that, Tarn said, too sharp.
You chose revenge. Do not pretend you are a healer now.
The words struck where they were meant to. Lilt's vow flared in her chest, hot and demanding.
Tarn stood right there, the liar, the maker of humming spores. The path to him was straight, clean, and cruelly simple.
Another screech tore through the fog, closer now, followed by the crash of reeds breaking. Morglo cried out, help!
Lilt's breath hitched. She saw it in her mind. Morglo dragged into the water, the duskworm's wings thrashing, shadows clinging like leeches.
She hated Morglo's soft devotion sometimes, hated the way she spoke of dragons, like saints. But she did not want her dead.
Tarn's eyes gleamed in the dim. If you chase after her, you lose your chance, he said. I will not be here when you return.
You will, Lilt said, surprising herself with the certainty.
Because you cannot help meddling.
Tarn's mouth twisted. And you cannot help being righteous.
Lilt turned toward the nesting rise. Her feet found roots in the mud, quick and sure.
She heard Tarn curse behind her, but he did not follow.
As she ran, the mire's shadows seemed to lean after her, drawn by motion. The fog thickened, turning the world into a narrow tunnel of sound. Morglo's sobs, the duskworm's frantic breaths, the slap of water. Lilt burst into the clearing and saw the duskworm bolting into the reeds, wings half-spread, dragging Morglo by a sleeve caught in its claw. Morglo stumbled, refusing to let go, face slick with tears. "Morglo," Lilt shouted. Morglo looked back, eyes wide. "It will not listen. It thinks something is chasing it." Lilt raised her hands, voice firm. "Duskwing, stop." The dragon's head snapped toward her. Its pupils were blown wide, and shadows clung under its jaw like bruises. It hissed and lunged sideways, trying to flee. Lilt stepped into its path, not threatening, just present. She let her vine blade dissolve into harmless tendrils. "No one here will hurt you," she said, steady as she could. "Not tonight." For a moment the duskworm hesitated, trembling. Morglo collapsed to her knees, coughing. Lilt felt a strange, bitter relief. Revenge could wait one more breath. She hated herself for that relief. She also clung to it, because it meant she was still something other than a weapon. Chapter 8. The Knife Under the Lily Pad. The duskworm did not calm quickly. Lilt and Morglo coaxed it into a shallow pool where lily pads floated like green coins. Lilt moved slow, speaking softly, while Morglo sang under her breath, a trembling lullaby that sounded like prayer. "It keeps looking at the water," Morglo whispered, "as if it sees something beneath." Lilt crouched near the edge. The mire water was dark, but not empty. She watched the lily pads tremble. Something solid lay under them, disturbing the mud. "Hold its attention," Lilt told Morglo. Morglo nodded and stepped closer to the duskworm's head, palms open. "Little duskwing," she murmured. "You are safe." Lilt slid her hand under a lily pad and felt metal, small and cold. She pulled it free with a soft sucking sound from the mud. A knife. Bone-handled plain, the kind used for cutting reeds or opening roots. Its edge was slick with a faint sheen. Lilt brought it to her nose. Not resin, not upland bright. It smelled like Tarn's bench, like experimental sap warped too long, sweet and sharp and wrong. Lilt's stomach dropped. "Morglo," she said quietly, "do you recognize this?" Morglo's song faltered. She looked at the knife, then at the duskworm, then away. Her throat worked as if swallowing stones. "I have seen it," she admitted. Lilt's voice stayed controlled with effort. "Where?" Morglo's hands shook. "Near Tarn's raft, he leaves tools out. He thinks no one will touch them because they are strange." Lilt held the knife up. "This edge is coated with his sap. The sap that hums, the sap that stirs the mire's nerves." Morglo's eyes filled. "I did not mean to," she said, words spilling fast. "I only wanted to bless them. The duskworms, they are skittish, and the thin knights have been wrong. Tarn's vials, they seemed like answers, like something that could make the mire listen to my prayers." Lilt's chest tightened painfully. "You stole his vials." Morglo nodded, sobbing now. "Just a little. I dabbed it on moss, on stones, on the nest. I thought it would keep them calm. I thought it would make them feel held." The duskworm hissed softly, as if agreeing that it had felt something, and it had not been comfort. Lilt's voice went hoarse. "And my brother?" Morglo's face crumpled. "He found me," she whispered. "He saw me near the rise at night. He asked what I was doing." She squeezed her eyes shut, and when she opened them, the truth came out like blood. "He said, Morglo, you cannot fix fear by stealing. He said Vineheart must know. I panicked. I dropped the knife. He picked it up, tried to take it from me. We struggled." Lilt's fingers tightened on the bone handle until the ache climbed her arm. "You cut him," Morglo nodded, shaking. Not deep at first, he tried to laugh it off like it was nothing. He said, "See, even my blood is impatient."
Her voice broke. But the sap was on the blade. It made the shadows restless. It made the duskworms frantic. He ran, and the mire did not help him.
Lilt swayed as if the ground shifted under her. Her vowel, so clean and sharp, now pointed inward, toward Hollowroot's own hands. Morglo reached for her, desperate.
"I did not want him to die. I loved him like a cousin. Like a root brother, I swear it."
Lilt stepped back, knife clenched so tight her tendrils ached.
"You swore," she echoed, bitter.
"So did I."
Morglo bowed her head.
"Do what you came to do," she whispered. "If revenge is the only way you can breathe."
The duskworm whined, low and frightened, pressing its head against Morglo's shoulder, despite everything.
Morglo flinched, then held it anyway, as if accepting punishment.
Lilt stared at them, the tender and the dragon, bound by mistake and devotion. The mire around them was quiet, listening. And Lilt realized the enemy she had chased was not an upland shadow. It was a familiar kind of hunger, the need to fix fear with stolen power.
Chapter 9. Revenge, Offered, and Refused. The judgment that followed is recorded in Braid and in my own notes. Some details differ between tellers. None differ on the central wound. Lilt had come seeking a hand to cut, and found hands she knew. Hollowroot's lanterns glowed again, dim and watchful, as if the swamp had relit them to witness judgment. Lilt stood in the central hollow with Morglo before her. The bone-handled knife lay on the stone between them. Tarn stood to one side, hands clasped tight, eyes darting like a trapped creature's. Vinehart's presence filled the roots above, not looming, just there, impossible to ignore.
"Speak," Vinehart said.
Morglo's voice trembled.
"I stole Tarn's sap. I used it on the nesting rise. I dropped the knife. I stirred the shadows. And Lilt's brother died because I was afraid."
The words fell into the hollow like stones into water. No splash, just a deepening silence.
Lilt's vine blade formed along her forearm, green and bright in the lantern glow.
It was not made for killing, not truly, but it could cut, it could punish, it could satisfy a vow.
Morglo lifted her chin, tears tracking down her cheeks.
"Do it," she whispered, "if that is what you need."
Tarn stepped forward, voice urgent.
"Lilt, no. Punishment will not heal the mire or the dead."
Lilt's gaze snapped to him.
"You lied to me."
"I did," Tarn admitted, swallowing hard. "I planted the charm on the platform. I smeared resin to make the scent loud. I wanted your anger aimed outward because I was ashamed of what it might find at home." His voice cracked on the last words, and he hated himself for it.
"I did not cut your brother, but I sharpened your grief into a spear and pointed it away from us."
Lilt's throat burned. "My vow was all I had."
Vinehart's voice was quiet.
"Vows can be chains," Vinehart reminded her, "but chains can also be set down."
Lilt looked at Morglo. She remembered Morglo at the funeral lights, hands tight around reeds, grief honest. She remembered Morglo's singing to frighten dragons with a voice that shook but did not stop. She remembered her brother laughing, calling Tarn Mirkborn like it was a joke. She remembered the way he had said once, when she came home scraped and proud, "You do not have to win every fight, Lilt. Sometimes you just have to come back." All those memories tangled together, impossible to separate into clean blame. Her vine blade wavered. For one awful moment, she wanted to strike anyway, just to make the world simple again. She wanted blood to prove love. She wanted a clean ending the mire would not give.
Morglo's eyes closed. "I will not fight," she whispered.
Lilt's arm shook, then she let the vine blade dissolve, tendrils retreating into her skin like a breath drawn back. The relief that followed was sharp and hateful. She did not want to feel relieved. She wanted to feel righteous.
"Revenge would only multiply the loss," Lilt said,
voice rough. She looked at Vinehart. But mercy without weight is just forgetting. Vinehart's leaves rustled, approving, but cautious. Then name the weight.
Lilt faced Morglow. You will spend a turning of seasons tending the duskworms, she said. Under watch. No stolen craft. No secret blessings. You will feed them, calm them, clean their eyes, and you will tell the truth when asked, even when it makes you small.
Morglow opened her eyes, startled. A season turning, she repeated, as if tasting the length of it.
And you will carry his name while you do it, Lilt added. Not as a prayer to soothe yourself, as a stone in your pocket, so you do not forget what fear can cost.
Morglow bowed her head, sobbing quietly. I accept, she whispered. I accept it all.
Tarn exhaled shakily. Thank you, he began. Lilt cut him off with a look.
Do not thank me, she said. I did not do this for you. I did it because I will not become another death in the Mire's mouth.
Vinehart's voice softened. This is harsher mercy than blood, Vinehart said, because it requires living with what was done.
Lilt turned away from the lantern glow, feeling her vow loosen, not gone, but changing shape. In tragedy, there was rarely a clean ending, only choices that kept the Mire from swallowing more than it already had.
Chapter 10. A Quiet Vow Kept. I close with what I witnessed myself, because it is easy to doubt a story that ends without a killing. Yet the Mire does not measure endings by bodies. It measures by what stops spreading. The next morning, the fog lay low and heavy, as if the Mire had not slept. Tarn stood at his raft with a clay bowl in his hands. Inside, the remaining whisper spores clung like soot. The sealed bottle sat on the bench, unopened, humming faintly. Lilt watched from the mud's edge. Vinehart stood beside her, still as a rooted pillar. Tarn's voice was hoarse. I made these to listen, he said. But they only taught me how easily I can make others hear what I want. He held the bowl over the water and tipped it. The spores slid out in a slow black ribbon. For a heartbeat they tried to cling to the clay. Then the Mire accepted them, swallowing them without a sound. Tarn dropped the empty bowl after them, as if even the vessel was guilty. I will not work alone, Tarn said, looking at Vinehart. Not for a time. Exile me from my bench if you must. I will teach safer craft under your rules, if you will still have my hands in the Mire. Vinehart's vines shifted, considering. You will be watched, Vinehart said, and you will listen more than you speak.
Tarn nodded, relief and shame mingling on his face.
Yes. Morglow passed by on the path to the nesting rise, carrying a bundle of fresh moss and a pail of fish. Her shoulders were bowed under the weight of a season's sentence. When she saw Lilt, she stopped.
I will do it, Morglow said quietly.
Every day.
Lilt held her gaze. Do not do it for me, she replied.
Do it because the duskworms deserve steadiness, and because the dead deserve truth.
Morglow swallowed and moved on, footsteps soft in the mud.
When the others were gone, Lilt walked alone to the grave mud. The place was marked by a simple braid of reeds, nothing grand. The lanterns were unlit now. Only pale fungus gave a faint glow. She knelt and placed her palm on the mud. The Mire was cool, alive with slow movement.
I swore I would bring back the hand that held the blade, she whispered.
But the hand was ours, and the blade was fear. The water beside the grave was still.
Lilt took a breath and let it out slowly, as if exhaling a knot.
I release my vow, she said, not because it was wrong to love you, but because it is wrong to make love into a weapon. The Mire did not answer with words. It answered with a soft shift, a settling, as if something unclenched beneath the surface.
Lilt stood. Her grief remained, heavy and real. But it no longer demanded blood to prove itself. The whispering bloom would continue as it had. Patient, cunning, contained. No borders changed. No great power rose or fell. Only hearts forced to live with truth rearranged themselves around a quiet consequence.
As Lilt walked back into the fog, she touched the water once more.
a small gesture like closing a door gently. And in the hush of Duskfall Mire, a vow was kept by being set down. You have been listening to A Tale of Valerian, part of StoryOmniverse.com. May its echoes linger until the next legend is told.